So how many times have you already complained today about something? Whether it was someone not getting to the car on time this morning, or the traffic on the way over, or whatever you were cooking for lunch wasn't turning out quite right. I'm always a little suspect when I read something that begins, "Researchers tell us." But researchers tell us that we complain on average 30 times a day. In fact, there was perhaps a little bit more intense study done in Great Britain, and this study stated that British people complained 8 minutes and 45 seconds every day. And my guess is our British cousins aren't a whole lot different than we are in that regard. Well, with that in mind, one wonders what the statistics might have been if researchers had studied the children of Israel. I don't know that they really complained any more than we do, yet what God has chosen to tell us pretty much in the entirety of what He's included about their history coming out of Egypt is their propensity to complain. And that's not just simply to show what a difficult time He had with these people, but it's a teaching lesson for us, an opportunity to learn about what God thinks concerning complaining. And so this morning, what I'd like for us to do is to talk about that very thing. And I'd like for us to begin this idea of complainers by looking at a time in Israel's history. So go ahead and turn to Numbers chapter 11. And we're going to look there this morning as we find this one occasion where it says the people were complaining in the hearing of the Lord. I think in a lot of ways, Numbers chapter 11 demonstrates God's line of tolerance, that while He is very patient with us, and as He was patient with the children of Israel, there comes a point where that patience does end. And so quite a severe verse that we find here in verse 1 of the chapter, when it says, "The people complained in the hearing of the Lord about their misfortunes. And when the Lord heard it, His anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some outlying parts of the camp." We can only imagine that God had tolerated as much as He was going to when the complaining begins yet once again, and God allows the fire to fall from heaven and actually to consume part of the camp. But I want you to notice what follows in this section as we look at the characteristics and the results of this complaining that took place. First of all, look at what they say in verses 4 and 5 as the Lord gives us a little bit more detail. He says, "Now the rabble that was among them had a strong craving, and the people of Israel also wept and said, 'Oh, that we had meat to eat.'" Verse 5 then continues their words when they say, "We remember the fish we ate in Egypt that cost nothing. The cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic." I want you to hone in on what they say. "We remember all of the good stuff we had in Egypt that cost us nothing." Was that what they were saying as they were having to make those bricks? And then as the Pharaoh said, "I'm going to stop supplying the straw for you. You got to go get it. You got to make the..." Was that what they were saying? "This food is free. It was wonderful. It was great." God shows us that one of the things that happens with Israel is that as they begin to complain and gripe about current situations, it clouds their memory to the point that it's taking away all of the things that were difficult for them in the past and making that present a very rosy picture. In fact, a little bit later on, they're actually going to say, "We want to return to the land flowing with milk and honey." They're not talking about Canaan. They're talking about Egypt. So here is one problem that God shows us. But let's go a little bit further with this. It also shows us how they were viewing their current situation. We continue in verse 6. It says here, as the people continue their words, "Now our strength is dried up, and there is nothing at all but this manna to look at." I do understand that perhaps eating manna every day could get a bit monotonous We know that, don't we, from the standpoint of when we have leftovers. Has there ever been any grumbling at your house about leftovers? We've had this meal and we're eating on it two or three times, and somebody in the house says, I'm getting really tired of this. Well, that was two or three times. But now imagine day by day by day, yet, what was that manna to remind them of? It's to remind them that their food is from God. That He is the provider, that here they are in the middle of this wilderness and they're not sowing and they're not harvesting. God is providing everything they need, but yet as they look at this, it's not that that they're thinking of. What they are considering is we're sick of this. And I think that's more telling of their attitude than their taste here. But yet what I find the most intriguing of all is what this did to their leader. I want you to look at the words recorded by Moses as he goes to the Lord about this situation. It says, Moses heard the people weeping throughout their clans, everyone at the door of his tent, and the anger of the Lord blazed hotly, and Moses was displeased. Moses said to the Lord, Why have you dealt ill with your servant? And why have I not found favor in your sight, and you lay the burden of all this people on me? Did I conceive all this people? Did I give them birth that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing child to the land that you swore to give to their fathers? Where am I to get meat to give to all this people? For they weep before me and say, give us meat that we may eat. I'm not able to carry all this people alone. The burden is too heavy for me. If you will treat me like this, kill me at once if I find favor in your sight, that I may not see my wretchedness. Isn't that interesting? That here in this section that's dealing with the griping of the people and they're complaining against God and they're wanting to return back to Egypt and their attitude toward God's provisions, Moses says, I've had all I can take. Why? It was them. Here was the man described as the most humble man to walk the face of the earth. When he hears their complaining day after day after day, he says to God, kill me. Isn't that interesting? He doesn't say anything about them. He says, kill me. I see my wretchedness here. I want you to keep this count in mind as we progress on in our study this morning. Think about the amnesia. Think about the lack of appreciation. Think about what it's doing to their leader. But let's expand our view just a bit. Because as we look at the history of the children of Israel, there are numerous times where God describes their complaining, and there's actually three different words that He'll oftentimes use to describe this. One is murmuring. We've come across that. One is grumbling. One is complaining. These words are so similar that in our English translations, they're used very interchangeably, and I don't think any damage is done to the text in that. But yet, when you begin viewing where these words come from, there is a bit of difference in the nuance of each word. And a lot of times, when we stop for a minute and we look at the nuance of the definition in the context of what's going on, it's very helpful to see what God is upset about. And so I want to illustrate that this morning by going to three different places where the children of Israel are either complaining or being described as complaining, and look at the word that's being chosen. I want to begin near the end of Moses' life as he's giving his final addresses to the people of Israel. In the book of Deuteronomy chapter 1 and verse 27, as he looks back over their history, he says this, "And you murmured in your tents and said, because the Lord hated us, He has brought us out of the land of Egypt to give us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us." Moses says, when I look back over the history of the people of Israel and my dealings with them, they murmured against the Lord. They said that He hates us because He brought us out of the land of Egypt. The exact opposite of the reason. As we look at this term that's used here, murmur, it actually means to whisper. It's the idea of running kind of a whisper campaign against someone. So you're slandering, you're backbiting. But the thing is, you're not going directly to the person who's doing that. And so what we have, really, Moses describing, is the people kind of viewed this as talking behind the back of the Lord. Now, obviously, you can't do that. But I want you to note how this verse, what it states here, you murmured in your tents. In other words, this was something they were not bringing out into the open, something they were not directly taking to the Lord, but instead they're complaining to one another about all of this. And isn't that exactly what happens in so many situations where you stir up a large crowd of people by beginning very quietly to discuss these kinds of things? So there we have that idea of whispering and slandering and backbiting, not against the people themselves, but against the Lord. Now, as we continue on, let's go to the book of Numbers, chapter 14. Different situation. One probably, though, that Moses had in mind as he was stating what was written in Deuteronomy 1. Numbers chapter 14, it says, all the people of Israel grumbled this time against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or that we had died in the wilderness. I was a little surprised at first when I looked at the primary definition of this word. It actually means to pass the night, to lodge somewhere. So it'd be kind of like you're on a trip and you stop at a hotel there, you're going to grumble at the hotel. You're staying there overnight. But what's interesting is God takes this term and He uses it for the idea of grumbling, in this case against Moses and Aaron, and it's not a one-night stay. Instead, it's allowing grievances a permanent place to lodge. It's not just one night. It's not a passing thought. It's something that is dwelling there permanently. And then I thought of one of our own phrases that makes perfect sense now in light of this. When we're upset about something, what do? We lodge a complaint. What does that mean? That means it's not a mild irritant. It's not something where we kind of fuss a little and then 2 minutes later we've forgotten about it. This is something that we've given a permanent residence and it's so troubling to us, we say, I'm going to take this to somebody. I'm going to let them know how upset I am. Look at what's happening in Numbers 14. They're taking it to Moses and Aaron. They're saying, we're so upset with you, we're lodging a complaint. We wish we had died in Egypt. I'm glad I wasn't Moses, because I would have been tempted to say, I wish you had too. That would have saved a lot of trouble, wouldn't it? That wasn't Moses, though. They were saying, we are sick of this situation. It is permanent in our minds. It's what we're thinking of on a regular basis. That's what we find here. And so what they're saying is, we're not just annoyed. We want action. We want to go back. And what will they do? They'll say, let's choose someone else to lead us. Get rid of Moses, somebody who will take us back to Egypt. Let's look at one other. And this is the passage that we started with this morning. In Numbers chapter 11 and verse 1, it says, the people complained in the hearing of the Lord about their misfortunes. And the Lord heard it. His anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some outlying parts of the camp. What's going on here? Well, the word that's used, again, has a slightly different nuance to it. And this is a word that actually originated from a word that meant to mourn. That makes sense in this passage, because it talks about the people weeping and the people crying. Well, what's going on here? They're sad about the situation. But perhaps the bigger thing for us to see is they're unafraid to challenge God. You remember Deuteronomy 1, the people complained in their tents, the whisper campaign. Here it says, the people complained in the hearing of the Lord. They were unafraid to challenge Him. They were unafraid. You know, this point is not where they're going and fussing at Moses or fussing amongst themselves. They're telling the Lord just exactly how dissatisfied they are. But here's the catch to that. What they're saying is, we're longing, we're mourning for this time that we didn't have a relationship with you. In other words, they're saying, Lord, ever since we've gotten into this relationship with you, things are horrible. Things are awful. We're having to eat manna. We're having to live out here in the wilderness. We don't like it. Now put all three of those things together. The whisper campaign, the backbiting that's going on, the letting something lodge permanently within the mind, and the mourning for the situation that they desire back before they met God. So surely in looking at all of this, we can say complaining is wrong. Complaining is a sin. Complaining is showing how far out of touch you are with God. And all of a sudden when we come to a grand conclusion like that, the pesky book of Psalms comes along. And it makes us rethink everything we've just said, because what we find in the book of Psalms is a pretty great man who's doing a lot of complaining. Let's take a look at that. Here is David in Psalm 55, verses 2 and 17. Attend to me and answer me. I am restless in what? My complaint, and I moan. Evening and morning and at noon I utter my complaint and moan. And he hears my voice. We continue on to another Psalm of David, 64:1. Hear my voice, O Lord, in my complaint. Preserve my life from dread from the enemy. We look near the end of the book in Psalm 142. I pour out my complaint before him. I tell my trouble before him. So here we've got David, the man after God's own heart, and in three different Psalms, he's saying, I'm complaining to God about my current situation. Well, even to ratchet it up a notch, we go to, I believe, one of the most underappreciated men in the entire Bible, and we find Jeremiah saying, righteous are you, O Lord, when I complain to you. Yet I would plead my case before you. Why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why do all who are treacherous thrive? And then we have the troubled prophet Habakkuk, who's looking at all of these things going on around him and trying to find an answer. And what does he say to the Lord? I will take my stand at my watchpost and station myself on the tower and look out to see what he will say to me and what I will answer concerning my complaint. So we got Israel on the outskirts of the camp being burned up because they're complaining. We've got Moses fussing at them because they complained in their tents. Yet on the other hand, the man after God's own heart lodges three psalms of complaint to God. Jeremiah says, my complaint over all of this is before you. Habakkuk says, I'm going to stand and see what you're going to do about my complaint. So what do we do with all of this? Well, let's take a look at two passages from the New Testament. So when is it right? And when is it wrong to complain? How do I know when God is displeased with me, when He views me like the children of Israel? How do I know when God's okay with it, like recording the Psalms and the prophet Jeremiah and Habakkuk? Two passages, I believe, help us with that. The Apostle Paul was writing about all of these things in the New Testament when he warned the Corinthians, and he said, we must not put Christ to the test as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents, nor grumble. So here's our Hebrew word brought up by Paul, nor grumble, as some of them did. And have you ever noticed the severity of the end of this verse? Nor grumble, as some of them did, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Listen to what God is called, the destroyer. Paul says, when you look back at the history of the nation of Israel, don't be like them. Don't complain. Don't grumble. But what does the Apostle Peter then tell us? He says, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time He may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on Him, because He cares for you. So here's the difference. Why is God upset to the point of destruction with the children of Israel, and on the other hand, ready to record for mankind the words of David and Jeremiah and Habakkuk, and let me add to that Moses from chapter 11. Wasn't Moses complaining? What's the difference? The children of Israel were totally dissatisfied in their situation, yet they refused to seek God. David, Jeremiah, Habakkuk, Moses were dissatisfied with their current situation, but they took it to God. It wasn't complaining in the hearing of God. It was bringing that complaint to God Himself. What they were doing is actually exactly what Peter tells us to do. They were casting all their anxiety on Him. Lord, I don't know how to deal with these people, is what Moses says. David says, here I am, I'm surrounded by enemies. I don't know what to do. Jeremiah says, these people won't listen to me. You want me to be a prophet? What do you want me to do? Habakkuk says, yeah, Judah's bad, but the enemy's a whole lot worse. What am I to do? They took it to God. You know, God knows what we're thinking anyway. He knows what's in our heart, and He knows how we're dealing with that. And so here, you've got two groups complaining, yet the object of their complaint is very different. On the one hand, they're disappointed with God and disgusted with His actions. On the other hand, you've got a group saying, Lord, help me understand it. So is all complaining sin? Is all complaining wrong? That's certainly not the picture we find from these men that we've looked at. So then, how do I make all of this applicable to me? How do I make all of this make sense even in my own life? We have a propensity to complain and to gripe and groan, to murmur. So what do we need to think about before we let those words come out of our mouth and even before that into our minds? The first thing is, I need to think about what this is going to do to me personally. When I am a person who grumbles and complains, pretty much what that's saying is, I'm dissatisfied with my life. I'm dissatisfied with where things are going. Now, is all complaining a sin? You know, if you have to sit at a traffic light in Madison for 5 minutes and you say, I wish I didn't have to sit here, is that a sin? Well, I would just simply say this. A lot of times, constant complaints about little things add up to something really big. Every once in a while, I might complain about something, and 2 seconds later, it's gone. But if my life is characterized by most everything I come across that does not meet my 100% satisfaction, I'm going to lodge a complaint against it. It's showing me that I'm probably akin to the nation of Israel. That I look at my situation in life and I'm allowing everything to exacerbate my complaint about where I am, and so I fuss about this and I fuss about that and I gripe about this and I gripe about that, and it's not an isolated event. It becomes one of a series of complaints that I'm making all day long. And I want to tell you, our current culture is adding to this immensely. Because almost everything that you're looking at now is saying, here's your opportunity to rank us. Tell us how we're doing. You know, you can't go by any of those, can you? Because there's only two classes of people that vote on those things. Those who are tremendously satisfied and those who are tremendously dissatisfied. And so you'll go to a hotel and it'll say, you know, these people love it, these people hate it. What is society doing to us? What's our culture doing? It's saying, let everybody know what you think about this. And so then every choice I'm making is based on, well, is there something I need to complain about? Is there something I need to grumble about with this? That can create the kind of life that would cross that line of toleration with God. And I believe it's that very thing that inspires the Apostle Paul when he says, not that I'm speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. Now, did that mean that Paul didn't change the things that he could? Of course not. But what it meant was, if there's a situation in life and he can't change it, and I think in his case, this would be in his work of the gospel and some of the difficult things he would have been in, he said, I've learned how to be content. I want you to note that that is a learned thing. One is not born content. One is not born with a personality that's just going to accept everything. It's a learned response. And so if I find myself fussing and grumbling and murmuring day after day after day about any and everything I can, I need to think about what that's doing to me. And I need to understand that that is taking me in the opposite direction than the Apostle Paul said I need to go. Well, let's also note that with this, I got to remember how it's impacting others. Murmuring, complaining is the most contagious form of communication. You have somebody get upset about something, and kind of as we noted with Moses, they're murmuring in the tents. And you start that whispering back and forth about it, it's not long before an entire group is stirred up. Historically, we've called that the mob mentality. That where one person would not do anything about it, let a number of people get upset about the same thing, and they'll do things that they would not do otherwise. So I've got to remember that. And with that, I've got to remember that it's detrimental to the good of those who are hearing. Look at what Israel did to Moses. Here was Moses who actually said to God on more than one occasion, I wish you'd just kill me. I wish you'd just take me out of this situation. So here's a man saying, I'd rather just die than have to put up with all of this stuff around me. So when I am complaining and murmuring and grumbling, what about those that are hearing me? Again, modern culture has put us in an even more tempting situation with this. How many mobs are formed on social media? I have seen that personally happen. Where somebody, you know, in my other line of work, when I see a teacher, you know, somebody who her parent gets angry with him or her, and before too long that's posted on Facebook and others are chiming in and they're liking those comments, and before too long you got this social media mob going after somebody. Happens in politics. It happens in everyday walks of life. Well, we got to be careful. That's the equivalent of murmuring in our tents, isn't it? That we're saying, well, here I am, I'm in private, but I'm going to let 5,000 people know how I feel about something and how upset I am about something. That's wrong. Why? Because I'm not considering the other person. And when we think about our chosen theme of the year of putting others first, do I really want to create a situation where I'm forcing this person into a corner? Think about what the Apostle Paul said in Colossians chapter 3. Bearing with one another. And if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other. And then he calls out the heavy artillery. As the Lord has forgiven you, would any of us like for the Lord to start murmuring and grumbling against us? Would we like for Him to run the smear campaign on us? To mourn because of His creation of us? None of us would want that. And so the apostle says, if you have a complaint about someone, deal with it appropriately. Deal with it as God did. Go to that person, seek forgiveness, give forgiveness, just as the Lord has done with you. So you must also forgive. As we think about putting others first, it means that we don't give problems with each other permanent lodging. If I have a problem with a brother, I've got to do one of two things. I've got to get over it, or I've got to go to him. One of those two things. And probably the first one of those is what I need to do the most. Because usually our complaints are not that big. And so before I get on social media or go to others about this, I give myself time to see if I need to get over it. Sometimes the light of morning can solve a whole lot of the problems of the night, can it? We've laid awake and we've tossed and turned and we've gone over all these scenarios of how we need to fight back against someone, and then the next morning we realize, I took that too far. That's what the Lord said. One other point I want to make. And this is one that I'm not sure we think about nearly as much as we should. I need to remember the impact on God. While I think about myself and I think about others, I got to think about God. Why did he take such drastic action on the nation of Israel? Why did fire come down? It's because they doubted his good intentions to the point of accusation. They said that the good that God had done for them was actually evil. They declared the Lord to be a God not of goodness, but of pain and suffering. Now, as we have already noted, God wants to hear our problems. Cast all your cares on Him. Cast your anxieties on Him. Be like David and Jeremiah and Habakkuk and Moses. And when something is troubling you in your heart, pour it out to God. But with that, understand God does not want to be slandered. He doesn't want us going around telling others, I can't believe what God has done to me. He doesn't want us to think that. He doesn't want us to reject Him and say, because I don't understand this, then God surely is not for me. We need to understand, just as James told us, that when it comes to the things of God, let us be quick to hear and slow to speak and slow to anger. For most Christians, this is not a problem to speak it to someone else, but it sometimes is a problem within us. That while we would not share these things with the world around us, we do allow a lodging place. Because we believe God has in some way let us down, mistreated us, done something He shouldn't have done to us. Let's be very careful. And like those great men that we've noted earlier, to understand that God wants to hear what troubles us. He wants to hear our complaints. But He wants it from the standpoint of understanding that He knows best. And that ultimately, He's going to do what's right for us. What does that then mean for us? As we think about grumbling and murmuring, complaining, we think about ourselves, we think about others, we think about God. And perhaps the very best solution is just to consider how very blessed we are. One of the best ways to stop complaining is to start thinking about how much God has given to us. And how little we deserve. We think about our physical lifestyles. We think about the standard of living that we have. And it's just almost beyond imagination, isn't it? That people who are considered not the very richest of society would be as blessed. But it's an even greater thought to think about what the Lord has done for us eternally. That because of our own doing, we got ourselves in a mess with sin. And God says, I'm going to forgive you of that. I'm going to give you a way back, a way of escape. That's what God's done for us. And how very blessed we are that this morning we can come together and we can celebrate the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ that gives us the opportunity for. This morning, if you are not a Christian, those blessings are there for you. That you can be a part of the family of God, those sins forgiven, washed away. As you come to Jesus Christ and in the waters of baptism you meet His blood and you die that death with Him and you're raised with Him to walk with Him. What a blessing that is. And this morning, if you're ready to do that very thing, God is ready to bless you. Maybe you've known that. All of us struggle, I believe, with the temptation to complain and to look at the bad things in our life and not the good things God has done. If that's allowed you to go down a road you don't need to go down, and you'd like for us to pray with you this morning, we'll do that. Or if it's just simply something you need to pray about with God yourself, do that even while we're singing together. Whatever it takes, though, let's realize what the children of Israel, who so often are very much like us, forgot, and that is God is on our side.